We are born fully self-confident. Ask any five-year-old what they're the best in the world, they'll tell you right away, I'm the best at soccer, I'm the best at hugs, I'm the best at everything. Because at five, you haven't learned to compare, despair, you haven't experienced setback, disappointment, you see only your potential, you don't see your flaws. And what we identified between the ages of 8 and 12 is there are 6 forces that hold us back from being confident. And it forms the basis of an inner critic that never goes away.
Today, we are spending time with Lisa Sun. Only with Lisa can I cover generational trauma, the escape from corporate America, the discovery of entrepreneurship, and bangs in one conversation. So be prepared to be taken on a ride, people. Like, for real, buckle up. Lisa has built a company and a movement to help women catalyze confidence. And I love talking to her. But it is listening to Lisa that has had the most profound impact on me. It is essential, and I found this out the hard way, that I always carry a notebook when connecting with Lisa. Because the gems that she drops act like breadcrumbs, leading me to the best versions of myself. And at the end of last year, she launched her book, Gravitas, out into the world. And in this book, Lisa gives a very special shout out to our Hype Women movement. Stay tuned later in the conversation for that story. And also, be sure to check out her amazing book on hypewomen.com, as Lisa and her book, Gravitas, were part of our very first Hype Women book collective that launched on International Women's Day just last month. In our conversation today, we talk about the tension that exists between fitting in and standing out, what happens when love and life are conditional, friends who help you shed your shame through psychological safety, our inner critic, and who we decide is allowed to be on the outside. And it got me thinking, when someone tells you that you don't possess something that you believe you do, whose truth wins? Let's find out.
Well, here is Lisa Sun looking fire as always with her bangs. Y'all can't see her bangs at this moment unless you're now watching this on video, but the bangs just give me life.
Oh, Erin, it's my midlife crisis. Thank you, first of all. I'm so honored to be on your podcast, just to be in your orbit. But as you know, because I saw you in New York, 3 months ago, I walked into my hairstylist chair. I said, look, I dumped a guy. I'm going through this whole thing. I launched a book. I'm exhausted. You know, should we go back to the haircut you had in your 20s? I said, yes, let's go back in time. Let's get in the DeLorean, Back to the Future style.
Get in the DeLorean.
So thank you. It's been 3 months and I've really grown into my 25-year-old haircut, the haircut I had when I was 25.
Listen, it looks better on you now than I'm sure it did then because of the woman that is underneath the bangs. But I think that this is actually a pretty common experience for women when they go through a life-changing moment, whether it's relationship, career, just like health milestone, whatever it looks like, that the hair gets changed. It needs to match and meet the moment.
You know, it's so interesting that you raise that because in the last 6 months, I've moved apartments, moved offices, launched a book, launched 2 product collections, dumped a guy, gained 10 pounds on book tour. I did all the things in 6 months, went on a 20 city, 51 event book tour in 10 weeks. And I said to myself, there is pre-bangs Lisa and post-bangs Lisa. And post-bangs Lisa, starting this month, I told my team, no new friends. Like if you did not become friends with me prior to this week, I will not talk to you for the
happening.
Next 6 months. No
it's
new projects
happening.
And no moves and no new launches. And my team said, we'll wait and see if that sticks. But the bangs are a reminder that I need to self-care for 3 months.
Listen, I think that's a message that every woman needs to hear. You need to put these sort of barriers and frameworks in place with time constraints that say, no to 3 P's, people, places, and products, okay? It's not happening. We're not doing any of those things. No projects or products. And we need to take our time and our just our peace back. Mm-hmm. Take our peace back so that chaos isn't always what we are navigating. And instead, we actually get to say, I am interested, but not now.
Agreed. So the bangs right, are a reminder now. Of so many things. And I know later on, we're probably going to talk about superpowers and things like that. So I'm going to come back to the bangs a little bit later.
Okay, I'm excited. Well, we will table the bang talk, and I've got bang talk for you too. So we will do all those things. I am just so deeply grateful and honored to be with you here today. Cannot wait to share with our listeners all that, Lisa, you are about, and the friendship that we have, that we've created, and our origin story. So before we get into all the things, of which there are many, I would love to start with what I like to call a hype women headline. And so this is my attempt to synopsize in two sentences what the world knows you as. This is kind of what the outside looking in sees and what you maybe are most known for. And what I want you to do as you listen to it is I want you to think about the subtext. What's underneath what so many people see that maybe you haven't shared yet or we haven't talked about? Because I think more often than not, women don't talk about those hard things. They don't talk about the challenges that got us through and there. And it's because we are conditioned to show up as really packaged and perfect. But that is not working. It's not working. So I'm going to kick off with your headline, and then we're gonna get under it. You ready, girl?
I'm ready. I love this.
Okay. Lisa Sun is the founder and CEO of Project Gravitas, a confidence company that offers innovative apparel and styling solutions designed to give every woman a confident sense of self. The national best-selling author of Gravitas, a USA Today bestseller that reached number one on Amazon for its genre. Prior to funding Project Gravitas, Lisa spent 11 years at McKinsey & Company, where she advised leading luxury, fashion, and beauty brands globally on strategic and operational issues.
So fancy. So fancy.
So fancy. And also like three or four people's stories, right? Like how in the hell over the course of your life have you been able to navigate a multitude of careers and a continued transformation exploration of yourself?
Well, and I love what you said is right. There's a public persona, something that we want people to see about us, but it's really the underlying story that's more powerful. I would go all the way back to the fact that I am the daughter of immigrants from Kaohsiung, Taiwan. And my parents were the only two people to leave their extended families, moved to Fontana, California. Most of your listeners have never been to Fontana, California. It's a desert town. It's on your way to Coachella or Vegas. And just to give you an example, we had a ticker tape parade the day we got a Walmart, a Claim jumper, and a Price Club on Foothill Boulevard, truly. And I grew up working in my parents' Mongolian barbecue, $4.95 at lunch, $12.95 at dinner, all you can eat. In 1987, at 8 years old, I was the cashier. I can tell you now that an eight-year-old does not have the grip strength to run that old credit card machine, the carbon copy one. I had to lean up on the counter and push.
Oh, because yes, you did.
If there was one number missing, my parents didn't get paid. I always say I learned firsthand what it takes to create something from nothing. Immigrants are visionaries. They believe in something before they can see it. And so as you look at all these careers I've had, when you think about the ways in which that shaped my journey, it was the fact that my parents were always creating. And so naturally, I am the daughter of a tiger mom. I was going to go to a fancy place like McKinsey. I was going to get an Ivy League education, go to McKinsey, climb that corporate ladder, use all of that accomplishment and wealth to bury all the pain my parents experienced moving here. Think about this, Erin. My parents, when I got into Yale, bought Yale mom and Yale dad tees to wear at the restaurant. And I was so embarrassed. And last year, I asked my mom why, and she said, you know what? No one treat me like dumb immigrant if my daughter go to Yale. And you realize like how much armor my parents had to create being the only Asian family in a 30-mile radius. So, you know, I was going to go to McKinsey. I was going to spend 12 years there. But what's so interesting, and you and I have had personal conversations about this, is it took me twice as long to get to partnership as my male colleagues from 2000 to 2012. And I blamed myself for that experience. I didn't blame the system. I could have said, you know what? No one looks like me. It's not my fault. Less than 13% of the partnership is women. But I internalized all that, right? As an immigrant Asian woman, I internalized it. And so that third journey of, you know, if you think of the first, growing up with immigrants, the second, being at one of the biggest firms in the world, the third, going out and doing it on my own, which I've done that for over a decade now, and starting a company that really embodies all my values, was really because my mom told me to take my life savings and do it. She said, you go bet on yourself. And she was the person who emailed the accountant, the lawyer, and said, my daughter's starting a company. We all need to help her. So that this third chapter of my story is probably my life's work. It's the thing that lights me up inside. Time is how you spend your love. Thank you, Zadie Smith. It's how I spend my love. And the commonality behind all of this is my mother. That is truly, Mama Sun is, her fingerprints are all over all three chapters of the story today.
Okay.
Where do I go from here?
I mean, where? That was so beautifully put. I am unsurprised that you could put that so beautifully in real time because of the stunning creator, communicator, and writer that you are. But it's also, it's knowing yourself, it's knowing your mother, it's knowing your history and the journey that you've been on that enables you to talk about it in this way now. We've seen so often the story of immigrants in America talking about bringing all of that trauma and also spending so much of their time trying to be taken seriously, to be respected. And it is a journey that is unforgivable, in my opinion, that we put so many people through. But you, as that first generation that is born here, that is now navigating this new way forward, there is so much pressure on you to heal those generational wounds and to also either carry the torch of the legacy and the expectation of what you are going to do differently while also not forgetting your individuality in that. Not all parents respond the way that your mother responded.
No. Well, you know, what's interesting is I always say, you know, if you are any form of immigrant or the child of an immigrant, there's a Venn diagram that I usually describe as on one circle is fitting in and the other circle is standing out. And when those two circles overlap, at the center is called authenticity, right? When you feel comfortable fitting in and standing out at the same time. And I think that's really the intergenerational trauma you're probably getting from a lot of your friends and your guests that have faced this. So most of my childhood and most of my corporate career was about fitting in. Don't stand out. Don't be yourself, right? And what you realize at that point is the rules were not created by you, for you, or to see you, value you, or believe in you. And so you end up beating yourself up. You end up self-flagellating, feeling deeply insecure, compensating by overachieving. By the way, this is decades of therapy and writing a book about it. Okay, Erin, let's be clear.
Decades of therapy is why we can talk about these things as in context.
You know, I remember my life coach at McKinsey saying, wow, you know, you grew up in a way that the only reason you were loved is if you won first place at the academic decathlon or if you won the spelling bee. She said, I want to take that little girl into the trophy room and give you a bat and break every trophy that you won. And I was like, oh my gosh, you've explained 35 years of trauma, right? Whew. And now in my 40s, I can tell you that standing out, the other circle, is scarier. It is lonelier, obviously not as lonely because I know people like you, who is my shame buddy. You're my new shame buddy, right? We can say all the things to each other.
That's right.
And what I realized is the intersection of those two circles is probably the place where I feel most comfortable living, right? That by standing out, and Brené Brown says this, by standing out, you actually create belonging. And that's in part why I wrote my own book, is because I said, I want to go back in time to my 22-year-old self or anyone who's lived that experience and give me my book, because I would have liked myself a lot more. Mm-hmm. I would have taken care of myself better. Someone said to me at a book reading, because I wrote this book on confidence, right? And debunking all the notions of confidence. They said, Lisa, I'm going to call it your BS. I always thought you were a very confident 22-year-old. I worked with you since your 20s. I said, I was faking it. I was faking it.
Yep.
I did what you all asked. I spoke up. I did all the assertive things, but I hated myself and was insecure and overachieving. Mm. And the person in the book reading said, that tracks. That makes sense. Okay, I got it. I know now what you're saying.
That's right.
So yes, thank you for highlighting that self-awareness. It did not come cheaply and it did not come without a lot of angst. But that fitting in versus standing out tension, I think, really describes so much, not just of the immigrant experience, but so much of the female outsider, person of color. Ooh. Anyone who's ever been on the outside looking in, that's the hardest thing that you're bridging, is fitting in and standing out at the same time.
That is so beautifully put. And I really see that trajectory, that tension, that bridge between those two happening post 40 for women. Any woman I'm talking to who is past that 40 mark, it happened for me at 40 very significantly, where I decided, how much longer am I going to abandon myself in service to others? Said another way, how much more time am I going to spend fitting in and losing myself in order to be accepted? And so you are so right that when a woman decides to step into her power, when she decides that standing out is going to outweigh the desire and the need to fit in, everything changes. Mm-hmm. It is an entirely new world on this side. And when you no longer care what people say about you and what they think about you, holy shit, right? I mean, it changes everything. So, you know, you said, I loved the term shame buddy, right? and I want to clarify this for people. So here's what that means. And this is what Lisa and I do for each other. We are able to share and shed our shame together, because in order to talk about shame, you have to be with someone who is psychologically safe. Mm-hmm. And because it's embarrassing and it's painful, and it also is not likely what the world sees you as. So when we talk about how the world sees you, and you're this best-selling author and you have this incredible company that's been around for more than a decade, and you have a ton of power behind you with all of the people who want to be a part of what you've created and are creating, it seems impossible that there was a time when you weren't confident. And so was that 40 for you, or was there a defining moment that really sort of shifted that pendulum?
Well, I think of insecurity and fear on a scale, if you'll give me the permission to talk about this, which is—
I'll give you the permission to do whatever the hell you want.
Thank you, Erin.
You don't need my permission, Lisa, ever.
No, it's one of those things that, you know, I've spent now 2 decades thinking about this topic. So I always say we're born fully self-confident. I know you have kids, Erin, but you don't have to have kids. If you've ever been around a five-year-old, we are born fully self-confident. Ask any five-year-old what they're the best in the world, they'll tell you right away. I'm the best at soccer. I'm the best at hugs. I'm the best at everything. Because at five, you haven't learned to compare, despair. You haven't experienced setback, disappointment. You see only your potential. You don't see your flaws. And what we identified between the ages of 8 and 12 is there are 6 forces that hold us back from being confident. And it forms the basis of an inner critic that never goes away. And if you want, we can go into those 6 forces, because this is chapter 2 of my book.
And really,
those 6 forces become a vocabulary through which you can double click on insecurity and fear. And what I always say is, no point in your life do you not feel one of these 6 forces. So I woke up this morning with at least 4 out of the 6 in my head. It's more that at what point in my life did I learn to channel the right mindset and approach to overcome those 6 forces? So I think of your inner critic never goes away. It's that you build the muscle of mindset and capability, that's what we describe as gravitas, that allows you to overcome those 6 forces and really embrace the best parts of yourself to keep going. And so to answer your question, I did not fully develop this approach until I started writing my book 6 years ago. And it was that moment where I said, I have learned so much about this topic of confidence. I've learned so much about insecurity and fear. And we launched a quantitative study on confidence in America during the pandemic. We did consumer surveys. We did focus groups. I brought my old boss out of retirement, Sally Dancer, who lives in Chicago. She was the head of the consumer insights practice, out of retirement to run the study. And that was the point where I said, you know what? I want to have this approach in my life, because if I do it for myself and I help others do it, we'll just all be better. I hope I answered your question, but I think the real point is inner critic never goes away for good. So it's whether or not you build the muscles and the mindset to be able to work with that inner critic on a daily basis. Because life doesn't get easier. We get stronger.
We get stronger. I think that clarification is really important, because if we say, here's how you get rid of the inner critic, that, first of all, it's impossible, but it also makes you feel even worse, because you're like, I still haven't gotten rid of it. Exactly. So every time the inner critic rears its head, you have the shame of still having it and the thing that the inner critic is telling you. So it's a double whammy of being taken down.
Well, and I'll give you the six forces, because I think it's helpful for us to talk about it. And as soon as I say the six, you're like, oh yeah, that's something I struggle with. Okay, that's always going to be there. Let me figure out how I'm going to deal with it. The six are deficit mindset, where you view your weaknesses over your potential. When you look in the mirror, do you look for the wrinkle or your beautiful blue eyes? Mm. The second one is shrinking effect, where you shortchange yourself, you underestimate yourself versus others. How many women say sorry all day long when they have done nothing wrong? Today's the day you say, thank you, great catch, it won't happen again. The third is satisfaction conundrum, where you tie your self-worth to an external marker of success. I'll be happy when I lose 10 pounds. I'll be happy when I get the job. The fourth one is superhero facade. I got this. Everything in my life is perfect. Let me post on Instagram so everyone knows. Well, if you're a superhero, no one can help you. No one can have fingerprints on your journey. The fifth one is setback spiral, where disappointment or criticism has it expound to cover all parts of your life. Oh my gosh, this person said this. I must be a terrible mother, sister, best friend. Everything in my life is wrong. And the sixth is systemic bias. This is where there are asymmetrical structures of power. And fundamentally, it's not your fault, actually, why you're feeling this bad. It's because the scorecard wasn't created by you or for you. But as I say these six, you're like, okay, some of these are never going to quite go away. It's how do we get through them? How do we work through them? So I don't think insecurity or fear ever goes away for good. It's just how you deal with it, how you overcome it.
And being able to name those six attributes is
it's empowering.
Is huge. It's empowering, because then you can't actually work through something if you can't name it. And so if everything feels just amorphous and overwhelming, you are screwed. But if you can start to really pick these off and identify them, understand the conditioning, and say that's where that came from, it removes the shame and blame, and it allows you to make a decision about whether or not you are going to feed the beast or you're going to remove its access to your energy.
And I have to tell you, this is, if you're a Harry Potter fan, I always say, when you can say Voldemort, you're not afraid of Voldemort. But I'll give you an example. Someone on my team came in the other day and he said, oh, I'm really depressed today. I'm like, okay, which of these six forces? It's like, I'm not going to do your exercise, Lisa. I said, no, which of these six forces? And he pointed at satisfaction conundrum. And I said, well, what's going on? You know how you don't ask kids if they're sad, you say, what happened? I said, okay, what happened? Yeah. And he said, well, you know, I was supposed to be captain of this volleyball team. It's a very big deal in New York City. I've worked 10 years to be the captain, and I hurt my shoulder and had to have shoulder surgery and had to step down. And I opened up on Instagram and saw the team I was going to captain won the gold medal without me. And I tied so much of my happiness this year to winning that gold medal. I said, oh, okay. Before we deal with that, can we just talk about how much abundance you have in your life? You know, what are all the, he's like, well, we're doing New York Fashion Week for the first time since the pandemic. We hired a new chief of staff. I have all these fun things going on in my personal life. And he goes, wait, I have a lot going on. And I said, you do. And he goes, oh, why was I so upset about this? Okay, I'm going to go like that post. I'm going to go share it. I always say you can be happy for everyone on Instagram if you feel the abundance in your own life, like you're not comparing. As you know, Erin, I like everybody's posts because I'm happy for everyone on social media. You know this about me. And it's because I really document the own abundance in my own life. And so when he came in and he said satisfaction conundrum, it was so much easier for us to then get to the other side of it. But that's why I created those six forces. I wanted people to have a word to say, okay, right now I'm feeling shrinking effect. That's why I'm not throwing my hat in the ring to apply for that job. You know what? I am qualified enough. Why am I shortchanging myself?
So that is an amazing exercise. And I think that giving people the framework to identify what their feeling is in a more sort of methodical way than just like, I feel happy, I feel sad, right? It's like, no, let's go a little bit deeper on where this is really coming from. But more so than even that was your exercise to pause on talking about the problem and reset on identifying the power. And because when you then come up against that, but you've already built up this padding around you, you realize how insignificant that thing is that was overwhelming you. So that's just, I mean, so much of this is about shifting our perspective, changing our mindset, looking at something from a different angle. And you have been so powerful in doing that over the course of your life. And I think, you know, words are so powerful. They have so much meaning, especially when you infuse them with your own lived experience.
And now, a pause in the podcast to hype women. Laura Modi is the CEO and co-founder of Bobbi, the only mom-led infant formula company founded in the U.S. and the fastest growing in decades. Laura is a 2024 CNBC changemaker, the only female CEO of an infant formula company, and the mother of four children under the age of 8. You know, just small stuff. To me, she's an icon, and to many, that holds true. She is changing the way not only babies eat, but mothers thrive. Since launching in 2018, Laura and the team at Bobbi have raised more than $140 million in funding. And in 2023, Bobbi purchased infant formula manufacturer Nature's One, allowing it to triple the size of its operations. This deal was part of the company's commitment to invest $100 million to increase infant formula access, quality, and options in the U.S. by 2030. The work and impact of Bobbi doesn't begin and end with a formula feeding journey. They are so much more. Find out the full story behind this powerhouse brand and the women who run it at HiBobbi.com. That's HiBobbi.com. Now, back to our show.
You know, there is a word for you that you are pretty famous for. And it's a word that started your company. It's a word that sort of heads the title of your book. But that word did not always have a positive connotation mm-hmm. in your life. Can you tell us about sort of how gravitas came into your orbit and how you took the power back from that?
Yeah. Erin, I love that. By the way, this has been one of the most fun conversations I've had about my book. I just love talking to you. It's so natural. So and this is really the second part of my book. The first part of the work that we do is around understanding those limiting beliefs. And then the second part is reclaiming this idea of confidence, which is gravitas. So when I was 22, I was told I didn't have any gravitas. And my boss told me to buy a new dress, look in the mirror, and love myself. She said, I can teach you how to be good at this job, but I can't teach you how to like yourself. Dumbo did not need a feather to fly. It just reminded him that he could. So I started my company with a mission to catalyze confidence. And part of why I chose the word gravitas is gravitas has always had, I think, a masculine, weighty connotation. In fact, in 2013, when Janet Yellen was nominated to be the first woman head of the Federal Reserve, hundreds of articles that she did not have the gravitas to lead the Fed. And you can look this up. Ezra Klein wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post where he called out those naysayers. He said, it's amazing. Because the pervasive view of gravitas does not stretch to include her. She's soft-spoken, correct. Collaborative. She's the most qualified for the job. Why do we only label men as having gravitas and having extroversion, charisma being the definition of it? Katie Couric said, when I was told I didn't have the gravitas to lead the evening news, it's because I didn't have testicles.
Correct.
And that was really the inspiration for turning this, owning this word in a new way. And the way we define it is a total approach to self-assurance. And it's an approach. It's not a state of being. And what I mean by that is if you look up the word confidence in the dictionary, it has nothing to do with bravado or swagger. It's an understanding of, appreciation of, and trust in your own abilities. Something a five-year-old can do. It's a mindset. The Oxford English Dictionary describes it as a mindset, not a behavior. And so really the twist we're doing is self-confidence, gravitas, is a choice and a mindset before it becomes a behavior. It's a choice to break out of those six forces. You have to make an active choice because you're not 5 years old. And you have to channel a mindset that starts with a self-affirming inventory of your talents, because no one is going to give you credit for something you're not aware of. And what we realized is, people did not have the words to describe their own superpowers and talents, or they had been conditioned by society to think of some talents as not worthy of notice or value. So for example, a lot of women would come up to me and say, oh my gosh, my superpower is so boring. I'm like, what is it? She goes, I get shit done on time and at a really high quality. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't. Can you please come work with me? I mean, that is a superpower I would elevate on my team. And my mom, you know, she used to say, when tsunami happened, men make a speech, women clean up the beach. Thank you, Lisa. You give me credit for clean up the beach. And so what we did is we did this quantitative study where we identified eight superpowers. Most of us have two or three. My mom does have all eight. I bet you have most of them too, Erin. Women over the age of 50 are the most powerful.
I mean, listen, Mama Sun should be running the country. Can we please make that happen?
Yeah, I want to have a TikTok for her called Mama Sun Mondays. But the fun thing is, you know, it's not like Pokemon. You don't need to have all eight. It's not like you have to collect them all. But really, it started to help a lot of the women we were working with, whether it was in the dressing room or the boardroom, articulate, hey, here are my three superpowers. Here are my five superpowers. Trust in their own abilities with a new vocabulary. And words are so powerful. You know how powerful words are, Erin. This is like why I love reading your writing. But this whole new approach of, okay, break out of those six forces and channel your superpowers, channel your confidence language, that became a totally different way to think about confidence, because most of the books on confidence for the last few centuries have been written by men.
That's right.
And
that's exactly right.
Well, I do have to tell you, my favorite piece of data we write about in chapter two is Kelly Hsu at Yale. She did this study of 30,000 employee records, and she noticed that women scored the highest on actual results and accomplishments, but the lowest on promotion potential. And men were the reverse. And when she double-clicked on promotability, it was charisma and extroversion. It had nothing to do with actual work product. And she said, this explains the 40% of the pay gap related to promotion potential. We're using the wrong scorecards to measure leadership. This is why introverts were happy during the pandemic, right? They didn't have to do the water cooler talk of belonging.
Exactly.
They could be fairly evaluated on their work. We get to do cool things. We make clothes for great women like you and others. We also get to think about how to help women feel their best self. And that's the really cool marriage at this company, right? I love that your headline, if you double clicked it, at the core of what I do is I truly help women catalyze confidence. And that doesn't have to be clothing. It could be content. It could be taking our quiz to discover your superpowers. You know, it's all these other ways.
It's all these other ways. And I love how you say, we make clothing. Yeah, clothing that Oprah notices. Like, I mean, you can't just be like, we make clothing. No. Yeah. You made a dress that is for every woman of every size, every type of body, that got the attention of Oprah. What was that moment like?
She changes lives. And Adam Glassman, the creative director of Oprah, he changes lives. So 6 weeks after we launched the company, we had two pages in Oprah magazine, pages 132 and 133 of the November 2013 issue. And Adam Glassman did a two-page story on us and changed our lives. You know, and this is one of the things I always tell entrepreneurs. I don't make anyone sign an NDA because everyone has great ideas. It's the will to execute. So six months before I launched my company, I invited 200 people, five people a night for 40 nights, nothing biblical. It just worked that way, to come to my apartment and beat up my business. Mm-hmm. I think feedback is a gift. You know, everything from the tagline to the product. One of my best friends from college, our old tagline was be remembered. I'm like, you remember someone who has gravitas? She goes, that sounds like rest in peace. It should be own your moment. And that's our tagline. Somebody came and said, I think Oprah is going to love your product. I said, oh, that's so sweet. That's so nice. It was a Friday in February 2013. That night, she put me on an email chain with Adam Glassman. The following Monday, because my old apartment was right next to the Hearst Tower, he came to my apartment. He gave me feedback on the whole collection. He said, this neckline's too high. This sleeve is too short. You know, you need to lengthen this. We made all of his changes. And April of 2013, I emailed him and I said, hey, we made all your changes. He's like, oh, send over the product. I'll take a look. He didn't tell us until a month before the issues went on newsstands that we were page 132, 133. He sent me a handwritten note. Congratulations. And he changed our lives. We sold out in a day. But more importantly, it was that I let so many people have fingerprints on the business, right? If I had not done those nighttime, you know, for an hour, tell me why my baby is ugly. You know, if I can't hear it from your best, if you can't hear it from your best friends, you can't hear it from strangers. And I still hear it from strangers from time to time, right? Oh, I didn't like that dress. I'm like, that's okay. It wasn't for you.
That's right.
But,
that's right.
But it led to all these other things happening. And it was a domino effect of, you know, all of a sudden People Magazine, Today Show, all these wonder. And I know you've experienced that, Erin, because that's how we met. We actually should talk about how we met, because it was a single LinkedIn post that you did that went viral, that all of a sudden I felt completely comomfortable cold emailing you.
As you should, and as the, like, as the universe, as the universe told you to do.
But things change your life like that. And you just don't know, right? Because I didn't go into it expecting that to happen. It was just a butterfly effect of, like, little by little, you do one thing at a time. And then all of a sudden something hits, maybe something doesn't, but you just keep, you continue to do good work along the way.
It's a new ecosystem of capital, right? When we think about the old capitalist system that is still very much intact and working against many of us, it has a very specific style. It's what you talked about when we think about places that weren't built by or for us, that have an algorithm that really sort of puts a very Eurocentric male patriarchal archetype that has a very dominant and specific way of leading at the top. So this new ecosystem, and it's what happened with your dress, was how do we share social capital with one another that can lead to financial capital? How do we share human capital? How do you give feedback? How do you share your experience and your expertise with someone? And we are constantly transferring. We are making deposits, and we are making transfers of this human, social, and financial capital in order to collectively move forward. Feedback is great. And I will say that feedback is important to consider as much as the person giving the feedback is, right? Because I think so much of our worth comes from external validation. And if you have given power to the wrong person to externally validate or invalidate you, it can either propel you forward or it can bury you. And so for me, and I feel like this is a lot of what happened with you as well, sort of past 40, you really start to look around and you decide who deserves your energy, who deserves access to you, and where feedback is sometimes just an opinion that you don't have to listen to, or feedback is a directive to consider in order to become better. So I think, you know, so much of this is also when you decide that your external validators are only going to be healthy people, it actually increases your internal validation of yourself. And the boundary that you set up there can protect you for life.
Yeah, I love that you clarified that, because I often just throw out phrases like feedback is a gift. And I love that you made it better. I think feedback is a gift from people who you trust and value and want to grow with. I value, if you gave me feedback, Erin, I would be like, okay, that's something I've really got to focus on. That's something that's important to me. But if someone who I don't necessarily want to emulate gave me feedback, I'd say, thanks for saying that. I'm still going to go do what I'm going to do. And I think that's a really important distinction.
Because you know that my feedback for you is out of love and out of desire for you to be successful. Yes. And so that's the road that feedback and that journey can take you on should you decide to listen to any or all of it. When feedback is coming from someone who does not have your best interest in mind, it's going to take you to a different destination.
Agree. Can I build on one thing you said earlier? Because I love the way you described social capital and whatnot. One thing that I give you full credit for is being one of the pioneers of abundance over scarcity. And I do want to tell the origin story of how we met because
yes.
you've been so important to me and you didn't even know it. When I was finishing the writing of my book, I wrote this final chapter, which is kind of my love letter to feminism. And if you think about where we live, we're in the fourth wave, right? First wave, can we have bank accounts without men? Can we be in the workplace? Second wave, can we have all the choices? Not can we have it all, but can we have all the choices in the 80s and 90s? And really a focus on scarcity, one seat at the table. The third wave being like, Me Too, time's up. Thank you, millennials, for your activism. And then the fourth wave, I call abundance. You know, there isn't just one seat at the table. There's room for all of us. We don't have to compete with each other. And I was writing this chapter on the sisterhood of gravitas, and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to end it. And it was right when you wrote your LinkedIn post about Jamie Lee Curtis and hyping women and be someone's Jamie, you know. And I read it and I said, oh my gosh, I'm going to reach out to this woman and ask her if I can include her in the final chapter. And I wrote you on LinkedIn and I attached the PDF of the page. I said, I'm not going to steal your words, but I'm giving you full credit. And by the way, my publisher wouldn't even let me. I think there's a certain number of words you can like excerpt, right? Without. And I was like, I'm going to excerpt this one line and give her full credit and whatnot. And I sent it to you. And you wrote back within a day. And you said, who are you? I love this. Of course. Can we? I'm like, and can I send you the manuscript? And can I, you know, all of a sudden I was getting your personal mailing address.
Yes.
And it was because what you described as the capitalism, the social currency, the fact that I can use my platform for good, that you can deposit, you can transfer, I will give you some. And it's this notion of abundance that I really think you're a pioneer of and why I so much wanted to include you in that last chapter of the book. So I love that you described it that way because it has changed the way I think about it. And I can unabashedly hype you. I know people on my team always reach out, Erin, can we post about you? Can you approve this? You know, and then you do the same for us. I love that you included me in your book stack. So I'm just saying that it all ladders up, right? If we can overcome our inner critic, if we can learn how to be the strongest versions of ourselves, then we have the strength to lead this revolution. And I always quote Gloria Steinem, right? To lead a revolution, you need to be a long distance runner. And to be a long distance runner, you need to have inner strength. And so I think all the work we're doing ladders up to something bigger. And I think this fourth wave of which you are a leader of is, I'm just so proud to be able to contribute to it.
I was like, I fell off my chair when I got that note from you. I fell off my chair. I sit here and I'm like, this goddess wants to put this in her book. I mean, it was hilarious to me that you felt you needed permission because I was like, this is a gift to me as much as you feel it's a gift to you. That's, I think, that was what was so interesting about our origin story and our meet cute is we both thought we were asking for something, but really we were giving. We were giving. And so it was really, really simple for me to want to continue to hype you, to amplify the work that you were doing, to celebrate and to include you, obviously, in our first Hype Women book collective that included 13 female authors who are disrupting systems in every sector. And of course, to have that book sent to Jamie Lee Curtis, where her name is in your book, right? And Jamie's also got one of your scarves, which we'll talk about in a second. And to know that she is reading your words and that so many other women are reading these words. They are not just letters on a page. They are love letters to younger versions of ourselves who always needed to hear this, but never had someone saying it.
And now, a pause in the podcast to hype women. Mariah Hancock is the founder and CEO of The Network, an organization that prioritizes creating an inclusive environment to uplift leaders from all walks of life. The Network strives to enhance your leadership skills and inspire you to recognize and embrace your leader within. I am honored to be a board advisor for The Network and was so lucky to be in person with Mariah back in February at our San Francisco Fairway Dinner on Leap Day, February 29th. You get the chance to experience what Mariah is building on June 20th at The Network's published author panel,
a virtual event featuring exceptional authors like Elizabeth Leiba, Sheena Yap Chan, Jeremy Vaughn Clark, and my personal friend, Elaine Lynn Herring. Grab your ticket and learn more at thenetwork-california.com. Now, back to our show.
So your book is a gift. It's a gift to continue to create that self-confidence, that inner confidence, and to identify and move aside that inner critic.
You know, I have to say, Erin, for those of us who are lucky enough to be text friends with you, personal friends with you, one thing I have to share with folks is how giddy you get with new ideas. So we're sitting at drinks in New York City. And by the way, we've had long phone calls, we've had Zooms, we've never physically met in person. And you said, I have 48 hours in New York City. I'm like, I'm getting to see you. I'm going to come meet you wherever. And you just were like, I'm starting a book collective. And you were so giddy. And she said, this is the idea. I'm doing it. I want your book to be in. And how can you not? It's contagious, the giddiness, mm-hmm. the enthusiasm you have for hyping other women. It's so genuine and beautiful. And I want more people to experience that giddiness if they haven't before, because you get so excited.
It's true. I get very excited and very animated. And you have been in a front seat, either in person or with the screen between us on the phone, like experiencing that. And it's true. And, you know, you said something earlier about just this notion of ideas, where ideas come and go all the time. And there are some people who have more ideas than others. And then there are some people who technically might have better ideas than others, depending on what we're talking about. But there is very clearly a difference between those that have ideas and do nothing and those that have ideas and do something. And people who have ideas and they don't do anything with them, they're dreamers, right? They think about things and they maybe even talk about it, but they are very unlikely to share, and they're not gonna put in the work. Those that have ideas and they do something with them, they are entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
They are builders. They are movement creators. They are the people that I am most drawn to. It's why I was so drawn to you, because you get it done. You make it happen. And you put yourself out there. So we were kind of joking even before we started the recording that the reason our paths even crossed is because both of us were willing to be vulnerable, to be authentic, and to put our ideas and ourselves out into the world. That's a scary place. A lot of people feel that they need to give feedback and thoughts on people's perspectives when they're out there. But what it also does is it allows people to feel seen and connected. And so our words connected us to each other. And that has continued an amplification process of a back and forth hype that is never ending, because we don't view this as a scoreboard or a tit for tat or who's winning, but instead a collective, right? It's what you talked about with the butterfly effect, which, you know, I'm obsessed with butterflies. Like I talk about even on our website, like the butterfly effect is looking at the fact that like individual butterflies flap their wings and they make a breeze. But collectively, all of these women coming together, flapping our wings, that creates a hurricane on the other side of the world. Mm-hmm. So I think that like our origin story is so poetic for the two of us and kind of what it will continue to build. But also, the person who told you didn't have gravitas.
I love it. Oh, she's an investor. By the way, she's an investor in my company. So let's be clear.
But here's what's interesting. The person who told you didn't have gravitas was using the wrong definition, right? And it's I think why we talk about the power of words, that we are conditioned to have singular definitions that often need to be reexamined.
Yes. And that, by the way, I love that you went there. And this is in part why we created our 8 superpowers framework. Cause I always say, don't tell people to be more confident. It's anxiety inducing and ambiguous. You can say, which of these 8 superpowers do you want me to be more? Do you want me to be more performing and outspoken and assertive? Okay. I can learn. Do you want me to be more leading, which is commanding and in charge? Or do you want me to be more self-sustaining and not take things personally and like, you know, not spiral? we start to double click. It's your whole point earlier, right? Around when I was explaining the six forces, when you can double click to that next layer, all of a sudden it creates dimension around what I'm asking you to do. So I think what she could have said to me is, you know, you should seek down more gravitas. It could be, hey, we need you to learn how to speak up more in meetings and be more assertive. And, you know, there were other ways in which we could have gone down that route. But I think we start to code words like confidence or gravitas because we've historically only been given one prototype for what it looks like, framed by male behavior. And this is the Janet Yellen, this is why I tell that Janet Yellen story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There was only one type of head of the Federal Reserve, and she was the one that did not look like the others. It felt like a Sesame Street episode, right? Which one of these doesn't look like the others?
That's right.
But the more we see Janet Yellen succeeding now as our Secretary of Treasury, you know, the more we start to change the definition of who can sit in that seat.
That's exactly right. And the more we ask questions to better understand why someone is categorizing us as something, we get to what it's really about. So with your example, your question, your follow-up question was everything, which is, tell me what you mean by that. What, how do you identify gravitas and how am I not meeting that definition? Yeah. Because if we get down to it, I am excelling and outpacing everyone in my cohort. I just am doing it differently. And that different way has not been identified as successful yet.
Well, and that's, so I love that you went there because one of my favorite questions that I encourage people to ask is, okay, so from your point of view, what's one thing I could do differently? Right. What I find is interesting is people are bad at asking for feedback and giving it. Right. So, you know, when you're like, oh, can I have some feedback? The person's like, oh, you're doing great. Just keep doing what you're doing. It's like being in a store. I'm just browsing, you know, let me get you out of my way.
Right.
Versus, hey, what's one thing you think I could do differently? Everybody has one thing. And all of a sudden it dimensionalizes what they're thinking in their head for you. I always feel like this That's is when right. I date somebody. I'm like, okay, what's one thing that you think could be better in this relationship? It kind of gives you all this insight. It's like the Gottman seven principles, like, you know, which horseman is here? Yes. Which horseman has appeared?
That's right.
And so one of the things that I think is important is having the courage to ask those follow-up questions. And that's what that's why I love that you went there, is ask the follow-up question. What, get inside someone's head.
Get inside someone's head. We all have different lived experiences. We're coming from different places. We have different conditioning. And so if we can't be curious about getting clarification on something, then we are all making assumptions. And that just leads to total misunderstanding. And that misunderstanding can be really detrimental in the workplace with respect to career progressing. It can be really detrimental in the personal relationship space where we make assumptions about what we think people are thinking. So, you know, that intention versus impact, getting clarification around those two things can be the difference in so many of these cases where something is either successful or it's hugely problematic. Okay, so we have only a few more minutes. I needed to come back to the bangs because here's what I was thinking, but I need to know what you're thinking. I have had bangs multiple times throughout my life. I had bangs when I was younger, and then I've gotten bangs as an adult woman for different reasons, relationships ending, jobs ending or beginning, whatever it looks like. And I think that I have experienced bangs and wanted them and then not wanted them because when you look at yourself in the mirror and you see something and someone who looks very different, that can sometimes be the first step in the process of an evolution and a metamorphosis and a chance to start to do things differently.
So
talk to me about your experience.
And I'm glad you brought it up because I told you I was going to bring it back in a moment. You know, I always say make physical changes for yourself and nobody else. And so when people say, should I dress better for the office? I'm like, do it if it makes you feel good. Don't do it for me because if you do it for me, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. I feel like I'm on an episode of The Bachelor. I'm doing it for the right reasons. So, you know, I got this haircut and I take our superpowers quiz every 6 months because as people progress and it's not a personality test, it's an inventory of your talents. And so as women progress and climb the ladder, they go from having two superpowers to four or more. And the first time I took our quiz 5 years ago, I had three superpowers. And we do this whole exercise where like, which ones do you want? Which and why? What is it you want in your life? Which superpower do you need for that? And so I had made an explicit goal of building two new superpowers into my life. So my top three superpowers, not surprising, are creating, because I love to will ideas into existence, performing, I'm an extrovert, and leading, I like to be in charge. This is a classic profile of entrepreneurship, by the way. But we found that starting your own business requires a fourth superpower, which I did not have, and it's called self-sustaining. I like myself. I know my worth. I know my value. I don't spiral when criticized. And that quality is needed to ask for a raise, raise money, or ask for a favor. And I realized that I had a real barrier around doing some of those things. So those four, so I said, I'm going to build self-sustaining. And then the fifth one I was going to build, which I'm still working on, is believing, which is optimism, right? I was raised by a tiger mom. You know, this is a woman that I came home with an A double plus in chemistry. And she said, where's the third plus? Go get some extra credit.
Where's the third plus?
You know, I'm working on being more optimistic. But here's where I was going. My brother, my little brother took the quiz and his number one superpower is self-sustaining. He just is like, I don't need to be the loudest voice in the room. I don't need to impress you. I don't seek your validation. And so I got this haircut right before Christmas. And my brother and I went to Christmas Eve dinner. And he said, oh, you got bangs. I'm like, do you like them? Do you like them? He goes, do you like them? I was like, oh, I don't know. I feel at 25 again. He goes, well, I'm not going to tell you if I like them or not, because you have to decide if you like them. And so I said to him, oh my gosh, that's a self-sustaining superpower. I've been working on it for 3 years and I still fell into the trap. He's like, yeah, like if you like them, good. And so it's also a reminder for me. I love that your point around it is a physical break from the past, but also it's a daily reminder of the superpower I'm most trying to build in myself, which is I like myself. I don't need to impress you. External validation is nice, but not required. So that's really, I didn't even know that until my little brother was like, do you like them? Because I'm not going to tell you. Like, why do you care if I like them? I'm a dude. I'm your brother, you know?
Well, but Lisa, I don't know that you would have had that conversation had you not gotten
exactly. Thank you, Erin.
And so like that's the wild thing about the way the universe works is it creates instances and experiences that you need to learn from if you're willing to listen through a multitude of ways. Mm-hmm. And so while someone might be able to say, I'm sorry, bangs helped you figure out the fourth superpower that you need. It's like, yes, here's why, right? This is the conversation that happened from it. This is what I saw in my brother that I wasn't seeing in myself. This is how I started to be able to pull some of those actions and those intentions. So I love it. I think it's amazing. I think that, you know, I know a lot of people don't like the phrase, and I appreciate it, like that, you know, everything happens for a reason, like, because when something really bad happens, that phrase does not feel good. But the way that I have altered that phrase to deal with hard things in my life from like just bummer hard to like truly difficult, traumatic, is good and bad things happen to us in life to tell us something if we're willing to listen. Mm.
I love that.
And so if we can, in those good moments, in those fun moments, but also in those hard and challenging moments, say, what is this trying to teach me? We can move through it. We really can. Okay. We are going to wrap because we're already over, as I'm not surprised we would be. And I would love to wrap with this little exercise. Oh, okay.
You froze on me.
Can you hear me?
I was going to say one thing is, and you will be there for me as I grow out these bangs at some point and that painful process, right?
Yes,
there's a lot of maintenance.
I have all the tips and tricks. I got headbands for you, girl. I got clips. I got spray.
It's going to be clips.
We're going to do side bangs. We're going to have a side bang for a while. Don't worry. I got you, boo. I got you. The growing out process is both physical and emotional, and you need a team. You need a team to get you through it. So I have your back.
All these serious topics that I was like, but you're going to be there for me when these bangs grow out.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. No, good. I mean, here's what it really comes down to. Who's really going to be by your side when you're growing your bangs out? That's how you know who your A-team is, because the people that are like, I can't handle this. I can't handle you in this grow out period. Like they're not there for the long haul.
But you know, it's like, and that's the thing is like on a more serious note, because when we saw each other in New York, we were swapping some stories about some shared experiences and we didn't even know we'd had these experiences. I always say, right, in prosperity, your friends know you. In adversity, you know your friends. And ooh, one of the funniest things, and I love that it's bangs, but I think it extends much deeper. You know, the last 4 years running a fashion company, when no one was going to get dressed for work and we had to make hospital gowns and face masks and whatnot, it's very hard to make new friends during a pandemic. And you were one of the people that I became friends with during a pandemic. And it's weird because when you get to the other side, and I know we're not fully on their side, it's like those are friendships forged in fire. For some reason, like you shared you met me when our company had negative sales because people sent back clothes they weren't going to wear. You know, when you meet people at their lowest and then you see them back on their ascension, it just changes your friendship. And that's why I know you will be there for me with the clips and the headbands when this all grows out. That will be a dark time.
It will be a dark time. We will shed light on it. Friendships, friendships forged in fire emerge from the ashes as the phoenix that they are.
That's and my that's my tattoo someday. I love it. Phoenix is my spirit animal. I guess we can't say spirit animal.
Yes.
Phoenix is my like in Chinese, Ouxiang, whatever, like a role model. So I love that.
Yeah, it's like it's your sort of mystical, mythical and magical connection to both what's happening to you in the physical world and the spiritual world. And so I think we all need those. And we need those people that are with us as our arms extend in both places, that ground us in reality, but also allow us to dream in spaces. Like what I have found as an entrepreneur is if you are not around other entrepreneurs, all you have are people telling you that you're crazy. Right? Like there, you can't do that. That's ridiculous. That sounds really hard. It's all of the reasons why it's not going to work. You need to be around people who can dream big and who say, I don't quite know how you're going to do it, but I am sure as hell going to be by your side while you try.
Well, speaking of which, we should probably let folks know that you and I are collaborating on some very cool products for Women's Equality Day.
Yes, we are. That
only happens.
Drum roll.
Well, that only happens when two of us have like three drinks at a bar and we're like, should we make cool clothes together that are inspired by hype women? And we were both like, yes.
Did I have all three of those drinks and you were drinking like tea?
No. I had at least one or two of those drinks. Yes. But you remember I'm Asian. So I get Asian flush.
You got Asian flush and I'm Irish. And so like, it just goes right down the hatch. But talk about our collab that came from that.
Well, we'll see where it goes creatively. Cause I'm looking forward to getting inspired by all of your work. The fun thing though, is I love that we're sitting together and your point around entrepreneurs who hang out with each other. We don't see barriers. We just see potential. And you were like, oh, what if we did this? What if we did that? And so I think we're gearing up for August of this year, Women's Equality Day, to come up with some pretty special concepts that will be inspiring and useful and beautifully made.
It's amazing. It also happens to be, it will be the 1 year anniversary of the Hype Women podcast, which is again, poetic, intentional as women who understand the ways of the world do things. So it's going to be amazing. We can't wait to share it with everyone and to make sure that this product is in the hands of all who wish to hype women. Okay, so we could go on forever. We've already gone over time as we would, because that is how we roll. But we have to wrap with this last exercise. And it is a sentence that I want you to fill in the blanks on. You can say one word, you can say more than one word, you can say a few sentences to fill in that blank on these three phrases. It's whatever comes to you most in this moment. So don't think about, does this encapsulate my last 10 years or my next 10? No, where are you right now with bangs in New York City? Okay, so the three phrases are, I was, I am, I will be.
I was overachieving and insecure. I am doing my life's work. I will. Oh, man, Erin, that's hard. It's I will be or I will.
I will be.
You know what? I don't even know how to say I will be because I like what I am now. You know, it's funny. Because I usually would say I'll be happy when I lose 10 pounds. Like, I will be continuing to do this work for as long as I can do this work. But I am currently doing my life's work, and I don't even look past that. There's no greener pasture. There is no plan B. I'm doing it.
That's beautiful. It's powerful that you felt that and that you said it. And the other thing I love the most about it is that I gave you a framework that you decided didn't work for you. And so much of our life is about being good girls and doing what we're told. And you said, yeah, that third one ain't a thing. It's like, I'm it. So my goodness, you done
it's the bangs.
So much of
it's the bangs, Erin.
The bangs. The bangs said, we're not playing that. We reject option three. Okay, bangs. We got you. We see you, bangs. It's a beautiful thing, because what it really does mean is that you are doing your life's work. You are in flow. You feel in your power in this moment, and you don't need to look past that. That's a beautiful place to be. So I'm happy that you're there. I'm honored to witness it. I'm so grateful for your friendship and your sisterhood. I'm proud of everything that you're doing and everything that's still to come. And I love you, girl.
I love you too, Erin. Thank you.
Thank you for this conversation. And I cannot wait for what's next.
Thank you for spending time with us today. We hope you feel motivated, inspired, and fired up to take on and burn down that patriarchy. We can't wait to see you again next time. Until then, please do your part to hype women. The Hype Women podcast is produced by Erin Gallagher and Melanie Scroggins. Original score by Alex Yuan. Please listen, subscribe, and rate our show wherever you listen to podcasts the most.